Lecture 10, September 25th, 2023. Lecture notes, pages 84, Still Principles of Marketing. We are running a business and information systems career fair. That's Wednesday, September 27th, from 2 to 4 p.m. in the Kent Student Center. Especially if you're a business major, but you might be interested in anything else, swing by. You can actually register off of the QR code if that sounds of interest to you. Think about it. So mini test 4 closed on its regular schedule on Sunday. Average score continues to be 91%. Mini test 5 will open tomorrow on its regular schedule, closing Sunday. That then becomes the last of the mini tests that will be covered on midterm 1, which is coming up. And I conveniently open it on Sunday, so you can get 5 done and into the midterm if you like. And I'll leave it open until Wednesday. So hypothetically, you have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to get to the midterm exam. It will cover lectures 1 through 10 and the textbook material, not including business or marketing in the news. We're just going to focus on content for the course. Whatever. FACBAC and ELC number 3 are open now. They close on Wednesday. Consider doing those to add extra points to your class grade. We've talked about this before, so I don't know. Any questions for me about the upcoming midterm? We've seen this info before, when it opens, when it closes, when it covers, how it works, how much time you have, the fact that it uses Proctorio. We've talked about it. Any questions for me about the upcoming midterm? Has anybody used the sample Proctorio test just to see if it works for you? Any issues, problems? It does what it's supposed to do? Yeah. All right. So, you know, you can't use any digital material during the midterm exam. Put your phone aside. I don't want you watching cat videos or looking up answers. I don't know what else to tell you. People do silly stuff all the time during the exam that caused me to ask, what are you doing? So don't do anything that causes me to ask that question. Open book, open notes. It'll record your camera, mic, and screen. If you have problems with that, that's fine. Let me know in advance so I can set up a separate in-person test with you. I haven't heard of anybody's actually had any issues with Proctorio being on the machine because it goes in and then goes away, but you may have a different view. You do not need a code or a password. If it asks you, then you probably have not done a fresh reboot, only had this browser open, probably haven't updated your Proctorio extension. Those are the usual fixes. What else can I say about this that we haven't talked about? No electronic devices. Open book, open notes have physical copies. Study for the test. Sometimes people forget that part of what I'm saying. It's important to do that part. All right, we're good. I'm just going over old stuff. And then midterm grades, I'll use mini tests 1 through 5 plus a midterm 1 exam. And that'll become your midterm grade. All right, so business in the news. The strong dollar is cutting into companies' overseas revenue. The resurgent dollar is hurting earnings for U.S. companies doing business overseas, with Apple, Getty Images, UPS, saying the dollar's rebound to an 8-month high is hurting their sales abroad and lowering their profit margins as goods become more expensive for customers abroad. So we think about global business. We think about importing and exporting. We'll eventually talk about that. We don't spend too much time in here thinking about exchange rates and profits, but it's a thing. So if the dollar becomes really, really strong, that means that you can buy foreign goods here. You can buy them cheaply. But that means everything you're selling overseas becomes more expensive for those people, which is a bit of a trade-off. So if you're a company with a lot of business overseas, you may see your sales slump due to the strong dollar. S&P 500 companies that derive more than half of their revenue outside the U.S. are on pace to post an 18% slide in second quarter earnings, while companies with more than half of their sales in the U.S. are poised to record 4% earnings growth. So here's the risks of international business. And how much business do you want to be international? How much business do you want to be domestic? How are you going to balance those risks as you go forward? The Federal Reserve's campaign to fight inflation with interest rates increases propelled the dollar to higher last year. So here we're seeing the impact of regulatory, legal, and political factors on business. The dollar is expected to continue to strengthen as long as the U.S. economy, growing at an annualized rate of nearly 5%, according to the Fed, remains resilient. So here's a bit about forecasting and planning. And what's going to happen is that dollar stays strong for you. So a bit of international business for us. Apple blinks on iPhone pricing. We knew it was coming out. Apple won't be jacking up the price on its faithful iPhone buyers. That could cost it profit. So we're seeing a bit about pricing strategy, one of the four P's of the marketing mix: product, price, promotion, pricing. The world's largest company by market value updated the key product line of its largest business on Tuesday. The new iPhone 15 family turned out to be mostly as expected, with enhanced camera features, USB-C charging points on all models, titanium casing with new central processing chip on the Pro devices. So here's their new product strategy with all their new features. One surprise, though, was Apple avoiding an across-the-board price hike. Numerous leaks ahead of the event suggested Apple was planning a more significant bump, leading several analysts to project an increase of $100 to $200 across at least the new iPhone Pro family. That would have resulted in an average selling price of that crucial lineup rising by at least 8%. That's a pretty good jump. In fact, the average selling price of the Pro family rose by less than 2%. So here's the idea of price in the marketing mix. Now we head scratch. They were foreshadowing, they were suggesting an 8% bump. They only settled for a 2% bump. What's going on there? Apple's shares slid nearly 6% over the last week on growing worries about Apple's businesses in China, where the iPhone might be facing a ban among government workers, as well as a resurgent local competitor in Huawei, which has launched a new phone that's reportedly developing performance specs close to Apple's premium devices. So a bit about global marketing, global competition, global regulations and marketing. So now we're rolling out a new phone. We have some significant foreign competition. How should we price that phone? Smartphones prices are already quite high, and it may be that Apple determined that this year's rather incremental updates to the iPhone couldn't sustain a price hike. Apple also might feel more of a need to keep its position strong in its core domestic market, given the challenges in China. So we have a little bit of global challenges going on there. The weakening Chinese economy and growing animosity with the U.S. is making life difficult for American brands and major tech players over in China. So domestic marketing for global marketers, politics and business coming out to play there too. Keeping iPhone prices stable will likely appeal to consumers already struggling with high inflation. It could also end up crimping Apple's profit growth, though as analysts had expected higher prices to offset low single-digit percentage growth in the iPhone unit shipments for the fiscal year ending next September. So not massive growth in shipments, and holding the price almost steady clearly is going to crimp your profit. So we'll have to see what happens in this go-round for Apple. Finally, we've been spending most of our time, as we usually do, talking about B2C, us selling to consumers. But there's an entire other side of the market out there, right? B2B, selling to businesses. This foreshadows our next chapter. As we finish up understanding consumer behavior, we're going to move to understanding organizations as consumers. So B2B campaign of the year, Autodesk. Miscommunication, particularly on a construction site, can lead to some disastrous and pretty weird results. That was the premise of Autodesk's commercial, Leave No Room for Interpretation. So here we're going to see B2B advertising and understanding the B2B user. To promote Autodesk's workflow management tool, Autodesk Construction Cloud, which connects all subcontractors, engineers, and architects on a construction project on a single platform, the spot unravels a 30-second game of, quote, telephone. So we're seeing construction, any construction management or whatever we call it here, majors? Okay. One of the few slides that's directly relevant that isn't fashion to you. So here we go, something directed at your major, as it were. No fashion involved in this one.
Hey, tell Kevin we need to redo this wall.
We have to demo it all.
The electricians won't play ball.
Redesign the hall?
I'll tell Nathaniel.
Material recall.
Okie dokie.
They're gonna fire Paul.
What did I do?
Make it 3 feet tall.
three people?
I have been acting wrong.
Yeah, the pipe's too small.
Recall.
No.
Horizontal?
Greg! We need to install
a waterfall.
The waterfall.
Be on the same page at every stage with Autodesk Construction Cloud.
Baseball.
So clearly things didn't work out as they had hoped for because they didn't have good communication on the construction site as they sent this message along. So Foreman's original instruction is quickly and repeatedly misinterpreted as passed along the noisy job site with unexpected results. You're losing my sound, I think. Did it go away entirely?
Yes. I'll be back.
And a one and a two.
Check, check.
Are we back? We're back. So it's always something. So anyhow, recognizing that Autodesk's target audience, including general contractors and subcontractors, is often on the move or returns home rather late, the strategy team opted to reach them via mobile devices rather than traditional broadcast TV. So understanding the media habits of the target audience, you have to be able to reach the target audience where they are, and this is media, mobile devices the way to go. They aired the commercial on popular streaming apps, including Paramount's Plus, CBS Sports, Discovery, Comedy Central, NBC Universal, HGTV, TV, along with YouTube. So that's their media plan. The video strategy was complemented with a targeted out-of-home, that's OOH, out-of-home buy, placed around active construction sites. That's things like billboards and posters around the construction sites. Following the launch, organic search volume for Autodesk's Construction Cloud was 3 times higher than in previous years, indicating a heightened interest and awareness among that target audience. I've said before, in the B2C world, consumers don't buy things they're not aware of. And so building awareness is important, whether we're talking B2C or B2B. All right, on to lecture notes, page 84, chapter 5, page 143 in the textbook. So we just left off as we were thinking about the idea of consumers' attitudes, and we made the points about positive attitudes influence consumers' next choice in a good way for us. When attitudes don't exist or are unknown for an unknown or new brand or negative, they're also going to influence a consumer's choice. So what we left off on is the idea that marketers are well aware that attitude's important. They try to influence consumers' attitude using some aspect or element of the four P's, product, price, place, promotion. And so I was going to give an example, a little bit of a silly example, of how they might choose to do this. So I'm considering taking a vacation. And I'm considering going to England or to Japan. And I'm running over the various aspects of the trip. One of the things that I'm a little concerned about is the idea that I don't speak any Japanese. Anybody here speak Japanese? Okay, so maybe I need you to come with me. But I don't speak any Japanese. What am I going to do? So based on that, if I'm trying to make a decision between Japan and England, what am I going to be leaning towards? What's my attitude going to sort of drive me towards? Perhaps towards England. Aha! Let's think about how we could influence this consumer and change his attitude. So let's focus on changing his beliefs about the brand's attributes. If you take a trip to Japan with my company, we're going to have a translator with you. They're going to make sure that you don't have any problems with the language. They're going to get you transportation into the hotel, get you the restaurants, get you the sites. You might even pick up a little Japanese, but that's not going to be a problem for you. Oh. I hadn't thought of that. Gee, maybe I should consider the trip to Japan. So by focusing on what they believe to be true, and of course only telling the truth, you really have to have the person going with you, you can begin to change your attitude. Or you might, for example, change their perception of the importance of the brand's attributes. Yes, indeed, if you go to Japan, you will be dealing with a foreign language, Japanese. But you know what? Future business growth is not going to be huge in England. It's going to be pretty huge in the Asian countries, including Japan. How do you think it might look on your future resume if you're able to say you've been to the, you know, to the Asian countries, you know some Japanese, you know a bit about their culture? It might actually be a positive thing to have that language issue, to deal with that. So it might actually be important to take that trip. Oh, I hadn't thought about it on a resume. So I began to change your attitude that way, perhaps influence you. Or maybe I can introduce new product attributes you hadn't even thought about. So in it, cold, drafty old England, they have all those old castles and stuff. Let me tell you about the wonderful entertainment centers in Japan, geisha houses, where lovely servers will serve you warm sake as you sit on the floor and entertain you by playing whatever that instrument is that they play. It's not an experience you're going to get in England. Wow, I didn't think about that. Maybe I ought to think about the trip to Japan instead of the trip to England. So marketers have to be aware of your attitude and think about what element of the marketing mix might affect your beliefs, affect your attitudes, and change you to be more favorable towards them, right? So they're well aware of this. Here is a case where marketers knew in the old days, men did not look favorably on body wash. It just wasn't a thing. So Nivea, for Men Active 3, said, hey, we can be used as both a shampoo and a body wash, but it also functions as a shave gel for both above and below the neck. Drugstore chain Walgreens featured male grooming in its stores each Saturday in June, dubbing the event Saturdudes to get guys involved in the idea of body wash. Axe, also trying to get into that market in the day, introduced a shower gel with a risque campaign, How Dirty Boys Get Clean. It's now the most popular men's brand with a 7% share of total body wash market. These brands had to grab an attitude that men didn't have and find a way to reshape it, to make it favorable towards the idea of a body wash. Yeah? Here's another attitude. I don't know how quickly we're going to change this one. Alpha Nail for a more masculine nail polish option. Alpha Nail, a cosmetic company that claims it's for men and fighters, is filling the gap in the market for a male-oriented nail polish. What? You didn't know the market needed a male-oriented nail polish? Well, clearly you were mistaken, because men apparently have very specific nail polish needs that cannot be satisfied by mere normal lady polish. For starters, Alpha Nail is designed by men, worn by warriors. Okay. I can now see how nail polish designed by men would differ dramatically from... Oh, no, wait, it's still just nail polish. At first, I thought the distinction was that nail polish was matte, although, of course, regular old ladies companies make matte polish too, but no, Alpha also has a metallic, a metallics line. So I used to say this company was not going to change men's attitudes very quickly, that probably men were not going to be wearing nail polish. Then, of course, a student wrote me one day and said, you made me feel bad, I wear nail polish. So apparently we're having some impact on the marketplace. Some men do wear manly nail polish, I guess. On the other hand, I don't think that this is going to be the next big thing, even if they try to change your attitude. How many men ready for nail polish? One, two, you're wearing it right now. One, two, two, and a two. That's it. So it's a thing, but it's probably not a mass thing like body wash caught on for. A little different cultural value there. So maybe. Maybe it's going to catch on. How about this one? Men's lingerie is a thing. Here's what it looks like. Here's a question you probably never asked yourself. Why don't men wear lingerie? It's one of those topics that, well, until now, has never really needed addressing. But Mangeray, an actual lingerie brand for men, is here to change the discourse on gender-specific intimates. Menswear intends to change the way men think about their underwear and how they look in them, providing a unique collection of lingerie exclusively for men. Real company, real thing, real products. And I don't know how much it's caught on. They've been there for a while, but they're still out there. Ladies, pure romance. What are you thinking? Yeah? I get the feeling here. Yeah. So maybe we need to see more of that catching on, huh? Huh? Ladies? For your men? Anybody? Huh. Well, maybe it's not really catching on. I don't know. All right, so they may have some more work to do to change consumers' attitudes. Another element that influences consumer decision-making is their lifestyle, how they live their lives. Lifestyles are the individual patterns of living as reflected by your interests, your opinions, your spending habits, and your activities. I stopped a guy out here a couple of semesters ago. He was wearing this sweatshirt. It says, I live, I ride, I am Jeep. Presuming this does really reflect his view of the world, that's a strong lifestyle statement. I am Jeep. I said, I told him what I was going to do. I didn't just sneak a picture. So, I mean, that's reflective of the guy's lifestyle. Do you picture this guy most weekends sitting at home or going to the library, reading some history book or something? Probably not his lifestyle, right? You can picture a bit about who this guy might be. Psychographics is a technique of measuring lifestyle and values, attitudes, and lifestyles. It's the way we measure this thing called lifestyle. There's a VALS survey out there that helps marketers to think about consumers' lifestyles using psychographics. And the VALS survey is available to take a peek at, to take a look at. I'm going to come back to the survey in just a second. So here is the VALS survey results. Here's what they say consumers' lifestyles look like. And they break them down into three primary motivations. We've talked about the importance of understanding consumers' motivation. On the left-hand side, we have people that are driven by ideas. In the middle, those people are driven by achievement, the need to succeed, to be successful. On the right, we have people that are driven by self-expression, saying who they are. At the upper side, we see there's two different sets of diamonds there. We have people who are higher in resources, higher in education and wealth, and are more amenable to risk. They can stand to lose a couple bucks here and there. At the bottom end of each of these, we have those people that have lower resources. They're not risk takers. They stand too much to lose. Very pinnacle, a unique set of people, not very many of them around, I guess, innovators who have very high resources, very high innovation, and sort of combine these various motivations together. At the bottom, we have survivors. These folks are just barely getting by. They're not driven so much by ideals as they are by the ability to get by day to day. So we have, as you see, ideal-driven thinkers versus believers, achievement-driven achievers versus strivers. Achievers are people that have been successful in their careers, in their business. They're doing just fine for themselves. Strivers are people that would like to be achievers. So strivers, for example, are going to have really big credit card debt. Why? They want to look like achievers. They want to look like they're being better. They're improving. Their status is higher. They might not be able to afford it or pay for it, but that's sort of their lifestyle. So marketers are well aware of these various groups. And as you understand who they are, you can begin to picture who they might be. Let's take a look at the makers. Makers of this group typically are distrustful of government, have strong interest in all things automotive, have strong outdoor interests, hunting and fishing, believe in sharp gender roles, want to protect what they have, what they perceive to be theirs, see themselves as straightforward, appear to others as anti-intellectual. They want to own land. That's a particular type of individual living a particular lifestyle. And you might be able to begin to picture what these people sort of look like, what they sound like, and how you might advertise to them. Experiencers are members of this group typically, quote, want everything. They're first in and first out of trends adoption. They go against the current mainstream. They're up on the latest fashion. They love physical activity. They're sensation seekers. They see themselves as very sociable. They believe that friends are extremely important. They're spontaneous, and they have a heightened sense of visual stimulation. As I describe those two types of people to you, can you see entire differences in where you would advertise to them, what your message would be, what products would appeal to them? Quite different sorts of things based on their lifestyle. Mark is well aware of these. Create ads for them. Let's take an ad that I would say is targeted towards an achiever.
Call it a crucible, where long-forged wisdom fuses with the burning drive of passion. Call it a new page waiting to be turned, or a new story waiting to become legend. Call it tough. Call it rare. Call it professional. Welcome to the PGA Championship.
It's not just the product, it's the way they lay it out. Where they, did you see that clubhouse that they focused on as they come in? Achievers belong to the club that have that clubhouse. They are professional. They are perpetual. It's the message as well as the product itself. Let's take a look at an ad targeting a striver, perhaps.
Do your thing. Take that step. Flee that nest. Realize. Fulfill. Run. Don't walk. Love. Not like. Drive. Keep driving. Be inspired. Curious. Be extraordinary. Turn off the highway. And soar. Spread your wings. Mazda. Feel alive.
Spread your wings and fly and eventually become an achiever who buys a BMW or Rolls Royce. Right now you're buying a Mazda. But still, we can see this aspirational aspect to this ad. For a maker, who we just described a little bit ago, let's see if you can relate this to that personality. You do it. You make it happen. You're independent. You don't bring in people to do that work for you. You're the kind of person that does it themselves versus an experiencer. Again, different forms of self-expression, by the way. Achievement was what we just talked about. These guys express themselves through fixing up their home themselves.
They say good things come to those who wait. What do they know? Why wait when you can get the Yamaha motorcycle, ATV, or Yamaha Rhino of your choice right now? The Yamaha Why Wait sales event.
We saw these guys are risk takers. Those guys are taking some risks. So you can, of course, get research into your target audience. Where do they fit here? What drives them? What sort of ads would you use? What sort of media would you reach them in? There are a variety of social cultural influences on consumers' decision making, personal influences, reference group influences, family influences, social class, subculture, and culture that we have to be aware of. So here we are in our model from last week. Here are external influences, culture, subculture, social class, reference group, family, and individual influence. So we know that we are influenced by other people, whether or not you ever try a product. Who's tried a product, a restaurant, a movie, a book, a clothing style? Because someone talked to you about it, recommended it to you. Almost all of us have, right? We know that other people influence us. It's not just you by yourself. Brand evaluation can be influenced by individual others. You get a new car, you drive it up to your friend, what's the first thing you want them to say? Wow, new car, can I take a ride? You don't want them to say, man, I heard that one was a lemon. Are you sure you researched that really well? Purchase decision, satisfaction can be influenced by the attitude of the others. You ever go out and buy that really special shirt, jeans, blouse, tie, hairstyle, wear it to your friends and they're going, oh, that's nice. You thought you were happy and all of a sudden, boom, that individual influences your satisfaction. So we have to be well aware of this by the others. Opinion leaders are people that you turn to who are well hooked into an area. Movies, restaurants, fashion, motorcycles, whatever you're interested in, they're really interested in it. And so when you want to do a restaurant in town, you know to turn to them because they're up on what's going on. They pay attention to the media. They read the websites. They read the blogs. And they have good taste. You know, they know what you like. And so you chat with an opinion leader to influence you. This is a comment on that. Nowadays, ads don't just sell a product. They sell an attitude. Look at this one. Here's a cool guy saying that nobody tells him what to do. He does whatever he wants. And he buys this product as a reflection of that independence. The imaginary tiger says, so basically this maverick is urging everyone to express his individuality through conformity and brand name selection. Well, it sounded more defiant the way he said it. So we are being led around in our independence by opinion leaders. Word of mouth, of course, goes beyond just hearing things from individuals who are well attuned to the group. Word of mouth includes hearing it from just friends that aren't necessarily opinion leaders themselves, and hearing it on the internet from other friends that we have. In 2022, marketers spent $16.4 billion to, quote, get people talking, because we know that you are influenced by other individuals, friends on the internet, close friends, far friends, opinion leaders. We generate buzz through buzz marketing. You can be a buzz agent, getting out there and helping others to make up their minds. Real company. Get buzzworthy products from your favorite brands. Share your opinion and spread the word about your experience. These brands hire this company to get people talking online about their products. L'Oreal, Lancome, Conair, Hormel. So get started in just three easy steps. And as one person says, my main goal is to show friends and family products that are actually great. Our feeds are full of sponsored ads, so I like sharing my genuine opinion on things. They seem to like it too. So marketers are willing to spend money and companies are out there trying to help you talk to others about your brand experience. Influencers are a form of this, a little more distant from you than your best friend. Who's an influencer right now that anybody follows? I'm just curious if any of the top influencers are people you know. Nobody follows any influencers at all? All right, let's see if you know any of these influencers. Yes, yes, thank you. All right, I said okay. You're fighting me on this. So, I don't know, do we know Adam W.? Ah, no. Well, he's only got 19 million followers. How about Alex Cooper? That's not Alex Cooper. We know Alex? One person. Oh, a couple people are smiling. They know Alex with 5 million listeners. Anybody know that name? Apparently, we're not very big with the influencers here. The Botez sisters. So far, we're 1 for 5. All right. Well, the rest of the world is looking at these people. Code Nico. All right, I'm done. So there are a bunch of influences that do influence some people, not you, of course, because you're more independent than the rest of the people, right? But they're out there. So let's think about how these things influence the consumer in this network world. In the old days, we got messages through to consumers through broadcast TV. Really old days, three networks, that was it. There were not 125 stations, you got one of three, but it still was broadcast, it grew. So we got to messages to people through TV, radio, out-of-door advertising to build awareness. Hey, we're here. Then we use things like direct mail and brochures to get into their consideration set. You've heard of us, now think about us. Then we used to build preference by giving them samples to test or running ads that compared our product to some other product now that they know who we are. Action was in-store purchase. And then we'd build loyalty by, for example, having reward points. Now all that hasn't gone away, but we're in a more networked world, so while this is valid and necessary, we now have a bunch of influences from other people, from social media. So how do we get awareness in a social media world? Well, buzz, blogs, search, make sure your search engine optimization is hot. How do we get into the consideration set? Well, people are doing online research. They're looking at user reviews. We've talked before that many of us are not going to buy a product until we see what others are saying about it. How many five stars they got? What are the one stars saying? In terms of preference, well, your social network and YouTube and local search is going to help you build preference for a particular brand that you're about to try. In terms of action, well, sure, in-store purchases, but how about group discounts? How many guys have bought something through Groupon or gotten something because of Groupon? Nobody. Even I've done Groupon. I guess it came and went. I'm too old for them. Whatever. Purchase online or in store. Well, I know in store to know, but we know you've all done that. Loyalty through perhaps friending people who are interested through Facebook or Twitter or email or customized upselling might build loyalty. And then we can add just sixth stage that wasn't there in the old days. Advocacy. You get you so excited that you'll do reviews, that you'll like us, that you'll link to us, that you'll create some social buzz for us because you like our product so much. Not a thing before we had this idea of social media. Anybody such a fan of a brand that they actually do video about it, blog about it, you know, get others involved, they're advocates for the brand? You guys do know what social media is, right? Just kidding. Thank you. All right, we good? So the impact of word of mouth buzz can be quite significant, which is why we spend time talking about it. This is from a little bit ago. Philips Sonicare Essence sent a $70 Sonicare Essence toothbrush to 30,000 agents. That's people out there who are going to agree to share their reactions with other people, along with coupons, so that those who really liked it could actually give people a coupon to share. Those 30,000 agents each told an average of 9.4 people. So we now have 282,000 connections, and those people told an additional 4.14 more people. So for this original investment, we now have a total of 1,449,480 connections from people talking to people about our brand. It's not the advertiser talking to you. It's somebody you know talking to you about the brand. This represented a $2.5 million boost in sales because people you know were talking to you about a brand that they really liked and maybe give you a coupon too. So the impact of word of mouth buzz marketing can be quite significant. Obviously, you have to have a good product and get the right influencers. What is endorsing a skincare product, a luxurious handbag, a new model SUV, or even the latest knitting accessory, there's a digital influencer for virtual every product category. How's it work? Well, the influencers build brand awareness. Social media influencers have a solid understanding of the platforms they're using and how to create impactful and engaging content which can build more awareness for a brand. Cool, people don't buy things they're not aware of. Strengthen customer relationships. 77% of consumers have had relationships with brands for a decade or more, and 61% of loyal customers would make an extra effort to shop from their favorite brand. So if you can use influencers and social media to build up that relationship, you've got an increased loyal base who will actually look around for you to buy you. So it's important to establish a connection with your target market. Consumers are more likely to trust peer recommendations, individuals they know, that individual influence, as they're generally considered more trustworthy than claims in brand ads, and social media influencers can be a very powerful force with their followers. Well worth keeping in mind as we think about the influences on consumers. Improve buying decisions with unbiased opinions. Social media influencers are great storytellers, and they know how to communicate effectively with their audiences. Who's watched an unpacking video? Somebody unpacking something. They know how to tell that story. They've got the package. They're unpacking it. They talk to you about it as it happens. A little excitement builds up with you and them. One of the main reasons why consumers trust influencers is because they can relate to these individuals on a personal level. They know them. They like them. Influencers don't just put up an ad on their feeds. They talk about their products in detail, how to use them, if they're value for the money, what consumers should expect. Basically, influencers cover the most asked questions that consumers generally have about any brand or products. And this can massively boost a brand's reputation and drive sales through these unbiased opinions. So we're influenced by influencers online. These are people at a distance, but we also come in contact with people near us on a regular basis. We know that consumers' choices in retail stores are affected by what they see on the shelves or the racks, but now come reports that their choices are also influenced by how they are seen themselves. In other words, shoppers behave differently in the presence of other people. Oh, you're there, you're shopping. We all know this from a bit of personal experience. You tend to buy differently when shopping with a friend than you do with, say, rushing through the store alone after work, or maybe when you're shopping with your parents, a different influencer. But recent studies go deeper than that, and they find the effect of anonymous other people on consumers' choices. For example, consumers feel more negative emotions, annoyance, self-consciousness, when they're in a retail environment where there are lots of people around them. Have you ever been in a place that's so crowded, you just leave, you're done? Why? You were there to buy something. It's too much, it's too crowded, I'm out of here. Consumers change their behavior to choose products that might be considered more normatively appropriate. That is approved by other people. Low-fat cookies rather than double-stuffed Oreos in a busier store. The effect is more pronounced the closer other people are to them. So you hesitate to grab off that double-stuffed Oreo just because a stranger is sort of near you. Interesting influence of others on us. Consumers alter their behavior even in the presence of just one other person. Have you ever had a salesperson who won't leave you alone? They just follow you around? That's beyond helpful, becomes irritating, and I'm done. I'm out of there. You have to be aware of that. So where's the sell by? A consumer's choice of product might not be affected by whether they want to actually buy it, but rather by whether anyone is standing around them when they pick it up off the shelf or rack. So the point, hover with care, salespeople. The right attention can prompt consumer choice. But if your customer feels observed, she may just walk out. Individual influences on the consumer outside of themselves. Family is an interesting influence on consumers, a different sociocultural influence. We say that young children learn to be consumers through something called consumer socialization. It's the process by which people acquire the skills, knowledge, and attitudes necessary to function as consumers. So I don't know, it's hard to remember back when you were a kid, but what did your parents teach you about how to shop, where to shop, how to pay? It was okay to grab the candy off the shelf and when it wasn't, etc. We're influenced in these decisions. This becomes an old example. Maybe we don't have it so much anymore. How many of your moms or maybe dads are really into it, maybe in the car market? Buy American. Do we still have some of that going around? Buy American. You might be hard-pressed to buy that Toyota if dad is standing right there. That might influence you you've learned, at least in, while Dad's around, buying American is the thing to do. We learn these sorts of things from our parents. So the family is a key factor in consumer socialization of children, learning how to be a consumer. Marketers are certainly aware of this, and they create commercials to target the family as an important influence in the decision-making process.
The healthy form, the simple grains of Rice Krispies.
Nice.
They're made with rice.
They're coffee!
Where'd the sound go? Is it in your tongue? A gentle grain that's easy for little tummies to digest and fun to eat. Kellogg's Rice Krispies.
Pretty sure that kid's going to have a positive attitude about Rice Krispies for some time to come as she learns from mom about that. Interestingly, we've mostly thought about you as the individual consumer so far, right? The individual buying things to satisfy their needs, their wants, their desires. But the family itself is a little different. It's a group of people, of course, and it can actually be the consumer. And as a consumer, because you have different needs, wants, desires, resources, we find that family decision-making often involves conflict and compromise. We're planning a family vacation. This is going to be very gender, very specific, very stereotypical. And mom wants to go to the beach with the kids, and dad wants to go play golf. And dad says, I can't believe it. I work 50 weeks out of the year to support this family, and I can't get a game of golf in on our vacation. A little bit of conflict going on there. Or you've got multiple kids in your family, and everybody wants a car at the same time. They all come to driving age, one right after the other. Can't afford to buy a car for everybody. I'm sorry. Or even simpler than that, just going out for a restaurant meal or a kid's meal. You go to Burger King, you go to McDonald's, you go to Wendy's, your kids influence all that. So we have to be aware of how that plays out in the family that we're dealing with. Families go through a variety of stages or life cycles that influence the consumer. If you are young and single, you probably aren't fantastically wealthy. Did you know that? You probably are spending money on personal goods, your own clothing, maybe doing a little bit for the dating game, maybe on vacations if you're lucky enough, but you probably aren't heavy investors in buying furniture from Ethan Allen. Then perhaps you become young, married, without children, a whole new lifestyle. That beer keg that you've been using in your dorm room for a table, you're not allowed to use that anymore. As you become married, you have to get rid of all that old crap, right? You're trying to figure out how to combine your various tastes, etc. Young, married, with children, go have a kid for the first time. Oh my goodness, the set of decisions you have to make that you've never thought about before. Marcus will reach out to you then. Middle-aged, married, with children. Your kids are into college. You're trying to figure out how to make that work. Middle-aged, married, without dependent children. What's another name for that stage of the family life cycle? When the kids are gone? Somebody saying it? No? You never heard empty nesters? The empty nest thing? So, you know, the kids are all gone. Now maybe you are buying that furniture for Ethan Allen. You're planning your bigger vacations. You're maybe getting your second home. Older married and then older unmarried, what happened? They got divorced at that stage? Why is the last stage older unmarried? What happens? Who dies? Who? Yeah, but usually which one? Who dies first? The men. So this is often going to be a lot of women that are widowed at that stage. But that's just a simple, straightforward one. What about the idea where you're young, married without children, now you're young and divorced without children? What's that do to the things you're looking for, the things you're going to buy? Middle-aged, divorced without children. Middle-aged, married without children. Young, divorced with children. All these stages offer opportunities for marketers to think about what you might need. Here's one targeting Young divorce with children, a sad situation, but an opportunity for marketers.
Hi.
Hey. Leo, come
They know what's going on in your life. They have a product for you, and they're able to help you if you're young, divorced, without children. What stage is your family target audience in? What do they need right now to make life work better for them? In the family decision-making process, we don't just have one individual making the decisions, usually. It's a group process. So we need to understand the roles in this family decision-making process. One entity is the person that is charged with bringing information into the family, the information gatherer. Imagine your folks decide that it's time to get a new home computer, and they aren't keeping up on the latest home computers. They don't know exactly what's going on. They might turn to you as the information gatherer to bring information back about computers that are out there. Is that feasible? Possible? Yeah? Now, turns out, your parents don't know that much about computers in general, and you are really a fill-in-the-blank. You're really an Apple fan, or you're really a gamer. What sort of information are you going to tend to bring into the family? Well, things more favorable to high-powered computers with good red screens or Apple products. So the information gatherer screens out some information and allows in other information. How's that working in your particular situation for your family group? Then we have the influencer. The influencer doesn't make the decision, but they influence how things are done. Let's be stereotypical again. In your family, mom sets the budget. Mom does not care whether you have an Apple or a gaming computer. She just wants a working computer that doesn't cost more than $1,200. So she's going to influence the process because she sets the budget for the thing, yeah? So, who's the influencer in the family for your sort of product? How do you reach them? The decision maker, again, we're just going to move ahead here with stereotypical roles, is dad. So dad takes the information from the information gatherer, y'all, watches the budget that mom set up, and said, well, we're going to get that one over there. So he's making the decision. How do you reach him with information? The purchaser is sometimes not that interesting to us. Sometimes the purchaser is told where to go, when to go, what to buy, how to pay. We can't influence them. It's all set, not very interesting from a marketing viewpoint. On the other hand, sometimes the purchaser does have the ability to make choices. How many of you guys helped when you were home go grocery shopping? Yeah. And how many of you had some discretion when you went to the grocery store about what brand or product to make, right, to buy? Well, that's an interesting opportunity then. I can influence somebody who's not actually a decision maker per se, doesn't decide to pay for the groceries or go get them, but you're going to make some decisions on the fly. That leads to young people's magazines, often young women magazines or young women blogs, websites, having products on it like canned corn. Or bread. Why are you advertising that to young people? Because they may be the decision maker when they get to the store. Oh, all right. And then the user. For this sort of product, a computer, a vacation, going out to lunch, who's the user, in quotes? Who's the user? Wild guess. I'll take anything. Yeah? I heard someone mumble something. Who's the user? Say again? Who? I just can't. Me? No, I'm the teacher. But who is the user of the computer, of the vacation, of the family meal out? Not whoever bought it, no. The user is, I hope, the family. Thank you. You gestured a little late, but it was the same gesture I was going to do. You could have just gestured. I would have taken that as the family. The family. So now you have an interesting thing. How are you satisfying the family? So you may have different levels of satisfaction among different people in that family group. How do you make sure that the individuals in the family are all satisfied? McDonald's has a great value meal. Maybe mom and dad are happy. They have a great playground thing. The kids are happy. And they have a healthy alternative. Mom's happy. So how are you going to make sure that the whole family is happy? Marketers have to know then who plays these roles for their products, whether to reach them, because they do or don't have any influence, any decision making, how to reach them. And you can see this can be fairly complicated as we try to suss this out for our product, for our target market, for people, families in our target market. Social class is, of course, a real thing. And social classes have strong influences on you, whether or not you're well aware of it. It's more complicated than this, but we have the idea of upper class, middle class, and the worker or lower classes. These classes in which you are raised influence your views of how to shop, where to shop, how to pay. If you are essentially from a lower class and you come into a bonus, you're pretty quickly going to spend that money. You may need it, but you also want it. That's what you do. You got money, you're going to spend it. Upper class, you got to come into a little bonus, you're going to invest it. Middle class might save it. Upper class might invest it. Differences in attitudes about money, partly driven by your particular financial situation, but that's part of your class structure. So it's a very strong influence on your personal values, attitudes, activities, social interactions, and your consumer behavior, where you shop, what you buy, how you save, how you invest. One study showed that approximately 80% of marriages occurred with someone from the same social class. Assuming that's true, give me a reason or two why that would make sense. Why would it be true that 80% of marriages occur from people in the same social class? Yeah. You have the same values that you can share and understand. I think I've said before that, maybe I didn't, but anyhow, it doesn't matter. My family was just out of blue collar. We were just into white collar. My wife's family, well, my wife's father was a successful Washington, D.C. energy lawyer. On a regular basis, they trundled off every week to the country club. I think I was in a country club once or twice in my life and not as a regular guest. Different sensibilities about that sort of behavior. It took us a while to get all our values lined up. Always clashing because what is important here? Let's save some money. Let's buy some new stuff. Wait a minute. So it makes that life easier. Also, in life, who do you tend to run into more generally? You tend to associate more with people from a similar social class. So social class can influence all of these things, the activity you get engaged with. What activity do the upper class arguably engage in that lower classes are not going to engage in? Activities. Golf? Even better, polo? Yacht? People really do play polo. It's a real thing. Yachting? Golf? Okay? What do we picture those kinds of activities being for folks from a lower social class? What are they doing? They're not golfing and yachting. No clue. No guess? Nothing? Maybe golf, is that what you said? Oh, mini golf, okay. Mini golf, bowling, pool maybe, would be the mental image that we might have for those sorts of activities, right? That's not to say that no upper class person never bowled. Maybe at their private bowling alley they have in their basement. And that's not to say that no lower class ever played golf. But in general, your activities can be influenced by the social class that you come from. What's the social class of your target audience? What are they looking for? Subculture. Subculture are the subgroups within the larger national culture with unique values, ideas, and attitudes. There are a lot of them. So the Hispanic subculture, yeah. And so in general, what do we know about the Hispanic subculture that might be important to our communicating with them? Many folks in the Hispanic subculture speak well, any guesses here, Spanish. And even second or third generation Hispanic consumers, when they go to grandma, when they go back to mom and dad, they're still speaking Spanish at home. Never mind grandma and mom and dad preferring Spanish. So we see obviously ads in Spanish. We see packaging the Spanish on it to appeal to these consumers in an appropriate way. African American, and of course the impact of BLM on brands as they try to show a little more sensitivity to the African American experience. Asian Americans, another group that has language preference, food preference, and so on and so forth. Of course, in some sense, college students are a subculture unto themselves. Look around at how you're dressed, and you'll notice that you're not dressed the way most business people are today. There's differences there as well. Culture. As you would guess, it's hard to understand other cultures, can lead to misunderstandings. But as marketers, it's important to be aware of differences in language, in symbols, in behaviors. So here is a visual image of, well, somebody from somewhere in Asia in a lovely white gown. What event might this woman be attending, would you say? A wedding? How many wedding sounds right? Yeah. So it turns out that it's a funeral. Why is that the case? In China, white is a mourning color. It's long been associated with death and the inauspicious qi energy. It's the color worn to funerals. A large population of China are practicing Buddhists, and their funeral practices also recognize white as the color of mourning. So you're trying to advertise your product in China, and you're thinking, wow, white's the way to go. Oops, you just advertised death and funeral. Symbols mean something different in different cultures. What's your reaction to this image? Well, I'm suspecting it's not somebody you want to date. So this is, well, he's a little young to date. Anyhow, what is this thing? Well, it's a swastika, obviously. Has a somewhat negative connotation in most of America. In India, the swastika is a widely used auspicious symbol of Hindus, Jainis, and Buddhists. There, the swastika is a symbol of auspiciousness and good fortune, and is regularly found on Hindu homes, businesses, printed materials, cars, temples, and ashrams. Not the immediate symbol that would leap to your mind if you were doing marketing there. It has a different meaning. This is a mildly amusing piece where we look at the language, and we're going to compare American English to English, and see some of the amusing differences. You would think, well, we all speak English. It should be pretty easy to get what they're talking about over there. Not necessarily. Can we make this work with a click, or do we have to futz with it?
Now, I'm going to give you some slang, some American slang. We're going to take turns. We'll see how much you know and how much I know.
Okay.
Okay? The first one I'm going to give you is flossing. Do you know what flossing means?
You mean actually flossing?
No, it's slang.
Right. It's slang.
You do know what actual flossing is.
Well, I know. I know the Americans' opinion of British dental practice, but yes, I do know that.
Right. Flossing.
That would be something close-fitting, and no. I know. I don't know.
No. Oh, there was...
That would be...
That was to really show you how wrong you were.
There right.
was.
That's kind of rubbing it out.
Yeah, it really is.
It
was
yeah.
aggressive. I'm
yeah.
sorry, because I could have just said no, but we
right.
just... In America, we like to really rub
with
it in.
With a claxon.
Yeah.
yeah.
it's showing off, flossing.
Really?
Yeah, showing off is flossing.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. What sound does it make when you're right? It's both.
Like that, yeah. Which is, it's probably a different sound in England.
It is, yeah. Well, we're never right in England. Chinwag. Chinwag. Yeah, I'm going to say it again.
Okay. Chinwag.
Yeah.
That would be a blundering idiot. A shinwag. You shinwag. Mm. No?
No. It's actually a verb, and it means to chat. It literally to wag your chin. It's actually very literal. It's not really...
Shinwag.
Chinwag. Did I mispronounce it?
I think that's why. I never would have gotten it wrong.
Oh.
I just couldn't understand the thick British accent.
Can we look at that in slow motion?
Yeah.
Yeah. Drat.
Yeah, chinwag, of course.
Yes.
That does sound like... All right.
So we're tied.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Tied at nothing. Badonkadonk.
Means to pass someone on a motorcycle and then see a police car and brake suddenly. I know.
It's an extremely curvaceous female behind.
Right.
Badonkadonk.
Right. We definitely don't have those in England.
You don't have?
No. Is it badonkadonk?
Badonkadonk.
It's a fantastic word.
Isn't it great? You'll use it from now on. I enjoy your badonkadonk, honey. All right.
That's fantastic. Chuffed to bits.
Chuffed
to bits.
Chuffed to bits.
Chuffed.
Yeah. Like chin.
Yes.
Chuffed
if you like.
To bits.
Yeah.
Just exhausted.
No. It's to be really pleased. To be really pleased about it. To be thrilled by something. I'm chuffed to bits.
That's what I meant.
I'm delighted. Chuffed to bits by. I would be chuffed to bits by your badonkadonk.
Yes. We're going to end on this one because everyone has learned this watching the show because I've helped them. Shoddy.
Shoddy?
Shoddy. Shorty. Shorty had the maple bottom jeans. Shorty had them baggy sweatpants, Reeboks with the strap. Just turn around and
get it. It's all one word.
Shorty.
Right.
She hit the floor, she hit the floor.
Yeah, none of this is helping.
Next thing you know, Shorty got low.
No.
Shorty is a young kid or a woman.
Really?
Yep.
All right, so it's a little silly, but it's real. I actually was watching a news show when they were talking about maybe the queen or the king. I don't know what they were talking about. And the person in the audience said, yes, I'm chuffed to bits. So it's real language, not stuff you would know how to say on your own. Even though we're both speaking English, it's quite different. So, point, as you go to another international market and another culture, how's that influencing the people that you're dealing with? There are other influences on consumers' purchase decisions that we have to be aware of. Situational influences, the purchase task. Why are you buying this thing? Okay? Are you buying it for yourself? Or are you buying it for a wedding gift? Would you agree that you typically buy something different for a wedding gift than you buy for yourself? I would think so. What is the task that most people are engaged in when they go to buy your product? Social surroundings, we already talked about that, but when do these people tend to shop? Are they with friends, by themselves, in a crowd, with mom and dad? That will probably influence their behavior as well. Physical surroundings, we talked about being really crowded. On the left-hand side is one of these bargain basement kind of places. You ever go, the clothes are on the floor, they're all jumbled together, the sales rack is a mess. Over here on the right-hand side, we have Bijon's Haberdashery, a men's store in Hollywood that you can only get in by appointment. Everything is pristine and precise. We can be influenced by our physical surroundings. Time effects, when you're rushed, you run in, you grab the first thing, you grab out, you're not doing a bunch of shopping around. You need to get it done. When do people tend to shop for your product? When do they say you should never go grocery shopping? When you're in what sort of mood? When you're hungry, because you're going to get extra kumquat-flavored ding-dongs because they look so good, right? Or maybe your audience tends to be, for whatever situation, depressed or some other pre-existing state. What are those states for your consumers? How might that influence their purchase of your product? What can you do about it, if anything? Amazon certainly understands that understanding the consumer is key. Amazon is not frugal when it comes to investing in data and science to try to understand our customers, understand how they're thinking about us, but most importantly, to identify where there might be products or services that they could benefit from. And that helps us prioritize what stories we should tell and what new projects we need to raise the awareness for. Importance of understanding consumer behavior. Lindsay, the marketing senior VP at Amazon, concedes that as more data floods in, measurement becomes harder. While measurement can sometimes be imperfect, if marketers are intellectually honest and objective, you really can find both what's working and what's not working in your marketing strategies. So here's the importance of research, which we'll talk about, to marketers, especially at Amazon. He continued, and that obviously then informs our rules for how to do the next thing better. But I think it takes a lot of discipline. It's really important for us not to fall in love with our own work in a way that we can't see how it could be better. And the right data can help deliver that perspective. Understanding the consumer is critical and key. In conclusion, understanding what influences consumers to buy or not buy your product and whether they'll be satisfied is extremely important. I hope you'd agree. And as you can see, after all this conversation, it's extremely complex. But now you're a little more aware about it than you were before. Okay, this ends the material for mini test 5, and so for midterm 1. More information to flow to you shortly. Have a good day.